as you, I think I mentioned, you are the one of the pioneers of aromatherapy and essential oils in America and in the promulgation of their use. Is that right?
Well, I think so. I wrote my first book, excuse me, in 1969. It was published in 1972, but that isn't the first book, of course, that was ever written about herbs or aromatherapy. A Frenchman named Gattefossé used the word aromatherapy in 1937 in a book. But I think that I was at the forefront of, say, the modern uses of herbs and essential oils.
Mm. Now, obviously, you've got strong connections with San Francisco. You've lived there a long time, and I suppose that was part of what was happening in San Francisco in the 60s?
No, not at all. What was happening in San Francisco in the 60s, I was involved in making clothes for rock and roll stars.
Okay.
And actually, currently, right this very minute until August 20th, there's a wonderful show at the DeYoung Museum called The Summer of Love, which was, of course, 1967.
Yeah.
But I don't think people were really involved in herbal medicine or herbal uses at all, well, except for some herbs that we know.
Right. And a bit of patchouli oil. And
patchouli oil is interesting. I really disliked it. It had a negative connotation to me.
Hmm.
Because it was used by people who weren't close enough to bathtubs and showers to make use of them regularly.
Mm.
And so you cover that up with that rich, deep, earthy patchouli oil scent. And, you know, that's really interesting. There was a great herb store in San Francisco that sold essential oils to the liquor and wine industry since the 20s, actually. Hmm. It was called Nature's Herb Company.
Hmm.
And I don't know where most people got their patchouli oil, but that possibly was the source.
Okay. And, if we hear the terms aromatherapy and essential oils thrown around, but maybe a lot of people don't really know what it is and what they are. Could you give a brief explanation of maybe a bit of the history and what they are?
Well, you know, there have been the distillations of plants which have released the plant's essential oils for at least 500 years.
Hmm.
It came into when the French found it, they started really the perfume industry, but really, when plants were distilled, the product that was extracted from plants in the greatest abundance was what I now call the hydrosol, because you need to use steam in the still to release the essential oil or the scent. And I guess you could say the scent or the essential oil of the plant is the scent in its liquid form. It's probably one of the most difficult items I've ever had to define, because if you see it happening with the still, the plant, the still, and the steam, you understand it. But when I just say that plants produce micro drops of this scent and that the distillation process releases it as a liquid, it's very alchemical, you know. It's almost magical.
Oh, it is, isn't it? When such substances can there's a cute little plant, but look what's lurking within.
Well, you know, and originally the essential oil was considered a contaminant because it occurs in such a small amount of the entire process that the contaminant, or the essential oil, was originally discarded, and the hydrosols were used as medicine because they were sterile and could be kept for a long time.
Mm.
And there's lots of stories about how the essential oil was actually begun to be used.
Hmm.
Wonderful stories. I mean, I can't prove any of them.
I know, but anecdotal or apocryphal stuff is wonderful, isn't it? It colors our lives.
It is quite.
And so in the course of your life, you came to San Francisco and the 60s. So what inspired you? What made the switch from couture to herbs?
I am actually a graduate of zoology from San Jose State College, and I had a scholarship to the University of Miami Marine Laboratory to study marine biology. And I met friends in Florida. And when I came back home, by the way, California is my home. I was born and raised in Antioch, California.
Oh, yeah.
And when I came back home from graduate school, I happened to come visit a friend who wanted to go visit a friend of his that happened to live in Big Sur. Mm. And I drove into Big Sur, and that was it. I pretty much stayed there for the next 5 years. But what's interesting, well, only interesting to me, I guess. But I lived in Big Sur, but I always maintained a apartment in San Francisco. Those were the days when you could probably do that.
Right.
I had a cabin with no plumbing or electricity in Big Sur, and I had a small apartment, which is actually right around the corner from where I live right now.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Still so there. I'm in the same neighborhood now since 1964-ish.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Well, that's changed quite a bit. I know the area, so yes.
So I went from an academic life to making clothes for my daughter to somebody seeing those clothes and asked if I could make a shirt, which of course I could. So I made a shirt. The person played music in San Francisco. Other people, musicians, saw what he was wearing and asked to meet me, and thus my career as a rock and roll couturier started.
Well, you're going to have to drop some names, you know, and places for that, I would say, if you can.
You mean who I made clothes for?
Yeah, yeah. What type of...
Oh, my goodness. 50 years ago, how can I possibly remember anything? I made... once I started making clothes for some of the members of the Jefferson Airplane, I pretty much... That's what I did. Hmm. But I did make clothes for Country Joe... not Country Joe, but the fish part of Country Joe and the fish. And many other bands. How come I can't remember? Oh, it'll come to me.
Yeah, but now the thing is, you know, just talk about cloth. I mean, what a time! I know I was in London at that time, and the patterns and the type of fabrics and cloth, there was a renaissance then, and so you must have had your fingers on some wonderful, wonderful fabrics.
Well, you know, in San Francisco, there were two great fabric stores here. One of which is still in here, called Britex Fabric. Mm. And I did not make clothes. I designed clothes. I did not make clothes that other people had worn before. Mm. So my clothes, the things that I made were pretty unique. I made clothes for some members of Big Brother and the Holding Company. I made clothes for the Charles Lloyd Quartet.
Oh, yeah.
All of them. I actually have an album cover of theirs where they're all wearing my clothes. There were bands called Cold Blood, band that I made clothes for.
Oh, yeah.
I did one shirt for one of the Everly Brothers. I made a lot of clothes for the Rascals and traveled with them to New York and purchased fabric in the fabric markets in New York City. That was great fun, too.
Mm. Well, you know, we'll move on from this, but, you know, it's a fascinating era for me. So now, I suppose I imagine your styles must have inspired us young, you know, just the fans who saw those styles on there.
I didn't have time to make clothes to sell in stores. Only in the very beginning, my dresses, my lady clothes, my women clothes, were sold in a few stores. But once I started making clothes for the bands, that was pretty much it. I didn't have much time left to do anything. And yes, I did make clothes for band managers and groupies and hangers-on and various people like that. Yes.
Wonderful.
It was fun. It was fun. By the way, there's a show in San Francisco called The Summer of Love, and there's about six of my items at on display there.
And right, and you've got a book about your experiences coming out, I believe.
A book was written by a man named Michael Clausen called Hippie Ink, and I'm very much in that book. But that's not just about clothing. That's about all the different businesses that the hippies inspired, actually. Mm. It's quite an interesting book. Mm. I found it fascinating about many of the things, like natural foods. The natural food stores started in the late 60s and the mid-60s. I know that I've been eating organically grown and locally sourced foods since about 1964, mm-hmm. as much as possible. I'm not a vegetarian, but as close as possible, I've been doing that. And there was a lot happening at that time, besides music and food and many other businesses were started then.
Well,
but
yes.
That book, Hippie Ink, is very, very interesting. My books are about herbs and aromatherapy, which I've written about 25.
Well, indeed. And and that's what we should slide into in terms of, here you were making clothes and designing clothes. And then what was the kick? What was the inspiration that...
To move on to something else, a different life entirely?
Yes.
I had an automobile accident Big Sur, and was temporarily paralyzed, which kind of stopped my traveling back and forth up and down the coast. And also I stuck to San Francisco and to recover. And in order to recover from this paralysis, I started doing and using some of the herbal remedies that I actually knew about. You know, again, I've come from an academic background. And I live very close to UC Medical School, which has a fabulous library. Uh-huh. So with my personal experience and with the use of the library, I moved on into herbal remedies, which I used on myself and then wrote about, and then other people started to use them.
But so it was just really... It wasn't an intentional thing. It just came about because of need. Your own need.
I would say that's true. I'm a master of using what's coming along rather than determining what should come along. The whole thing is very connected to me because I made clothes only out of natural fabrics like linen, cotton, and silk. And I only was eating as much as possible real food, not canned food, not frozen food, but real food because I did live in Big Sur as well, where, we don't have grocery stores next door.
Right.
And actually, in the flat that I lived in San Francisco, one of the first health food stores opened literally next door. So that was quite convenient. It all worked very well together,
Right, that was the area of the food conspiracy, wasn't it?
There was that, too.
Yeah.
And the diggers were in San Francisco giving food away, making food, giving food away. I'm talking now about 1966 and the early part of 67. Once the media found out about what was going on in San Francisco, it changed in the summer of 1967. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people came here, even teenagers, from just pot and LSD, it often went to harder drugs after that, and then things moved on from there.
Right. Yeah, certainly when I came to San Francisco the first time in 1972 and went down Haight Street, I must admit I was pretty disappointed. Everything was boarded up and it was looking pretty seedy.
Well, 1972 is not 1967. Yeah. It was an incredible change in everything from 1967 to, when Altamont happened in 1969, that was the end of the hippies. It really was. And if you're saying 1972, even the way people dressed had totally changed by then.
That's a good
point.
So
I can understand why you were disappointed.
Yeah. For us in England, that was like the Mecca, San Francisco, obviously.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't have cell phones or instantaneous communication then, because I know that in about middle 1967, a lot of people that were here in the city actually moved to Berkeley and to Marin County and to other places. And yes, it was awful in the early 70s.
Indeed, there was some transition times. Let's put it that way. With the war going on as well, that throw that into the mix. It wasn't very pretty. But then, did that give you, when you started working with herbs and things, did that take you away from that? I suppose gave you something else to focus.
Well, I had a child as well, so I was a working person. I wasn't a dropout by any means. Mm. Gone from graduate school to Big Sur to San Francisco, and then wrote this book, which ended up selling like 400,000 copies. Hey. It was in everybody's hands by 1973, and I was actually teaching herbal classes in my house. Mm-hmm. I actually had found somebody and was married and was in 73. I had another child, a boy, so I was like a homebody and an at-home, nonstop, working with herbs and essential oils homebody by then. So I really didn't know what was going on just a few blocks from my house in the Haight-Ashbury.
But I know what you mean. When you have a kid or a couple of kids, that's a whole different kettle of fish. Or a shed full of herbs, I should say.
Yeah. and the transition from herbal medicine to essential oils and aromatherapy is really easy because herbs smell. And as I said, I already knew that they had essential oils in them. Even in my first book, Herbs and Things, I wrote about the essential oils of plants. Mm. I believe I have quite a bit of information in there on distillation and essential oils. So it was a natural advance in my knowledge to then start writing about and thinking about and using the essential oils. And I also, then proceeded to write after that home study courses in both herbalism and aromatherapy.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, it transitioned from one thing to another until here I am today at 80.
Wow.
Talking about it.
Wonderful. What a life's work. And the thing is, it wasn't just herbs. You actually got there with the plumbing and figured out the whole distillation equipment and that whole side of it to perfect that side, didn't you?
I was very fortunate. I'm a very curious person. And I purchased my first still, I don't know, maybe 78, something like that. Hmm. Unfortunately, when it came, it was dented, and I sent it back, and it took me another few years to start working on it again. But, distillation isn't new. I like to drink. Therefore, I know that whiskeys are distilled, gin is distilled, vodka is distilled. It's not a mystery. I just had no idea way back in the late 70s that I could actually do it myself. And then I met a very, very interesting person who was a 10th generation cognac distiller. I can't remember the dates. I keep trying to remember these dates. It's very hard to pin it all down. I went up there to north of Hopland and went to the distillery where they were doing brandies and spent a lot of time up there learning the fine points of distillation. I also had a distillation company called copperstills.com, and I think I sold that only about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm.
So I was selling stills and teaching distillation. I still teach natural botanical perfumery, actually.
Mm.
I have one more class coming up in August in perfumery.
Now, as a side, talk about perfumery. What is the difference between, say, essential oils and perfumery? is there, what are the essential differences?
Well, essential oils are used in perfumery if you make natural perfumery.
Okay.
I only teach natural botanical perfumery with essential oils from plants. I do not use, personally, I do not use synthetics. Mm. Most perfumes that you go and purchase in a store, they're colorless and they're clear, or they may be pink and clear, or green sometimes. But those are all synthetics. Those are made, and that's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I teach my students how to extract via maceration, extract via enfleurage, which is fresh flowers on fat, and how to use those natural ingredients to make their own perfumes. You need a certain amount of them. You can't just do it with, like, three roses, for instance.
Okay.
Right now, we're having Cecil Bruner roses in San Francisco, and I just finished a three-day tincture of Cecil Bruner roses that is going to be used in a nearby bar to flavor new drinks.
Oh. Huh.
It's all interconnected, you know?
Oh, interesting. And that is fascinating. I was wondering about that, you know, just as an example, lavenders. Now, there's lots of different types of lavender, English, Italian, French.
Yeah, but those are place names. It's just like terroir. Let's go back. Let's talk about grapes for a minute.
Okay.
You don't go to a grocery store and buy a bottle of Vitis vinifera, do you?
Right.
What you do is you go in and buy a bottle of Pinot Noir. But it is Vitis vinifera. They're all the same basic plant, and that's the same with lavender. If you start thinking about it, the plant, if it's English lavender, means nothing. It means it was grown in England.
Okay.
You really need to know what the correct Latin name or variety of the particular plant that you want. You also need to know, it's just like wine, the terroir. Where is it grown? High altitude lavender has a much different aroma than lavender grown, say, in the hot flatlands of, you know, near Fresno, or even in the wine country up there. It's a completely different odor. You have to, in perfumery, or you want to be very picky about what your plant, your essential oil, smells like, so that you'll make the right perfume. And to do that, you need to know the name of the plant, where it was grown, and how it was grown.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to use organically grown plants, but, you know, sometimes I don't.
Yeah, it's what's available, obviously. And is there, we're speaking with Jeannie Rose, amazing maven of aromatherapy and essential oils and many other things. And what... is there a better time of year to collect oils, or does that...
It depends on the plant.
Hmm.
Here in San Francisco, the best time to get a rosemary that is very, very sweet-smelling rather than camphor-smelling would be in February.
Hmm.
But roses, for instance, I know that there's a woman who has the fine quality roses in Napa, and she'll be picking and distilling in about 2 weeks from now. That's when they're ready. They're not ready in September. They're not ready in February. Those particular roses are ready in the second week of May.
Hmm.
So it's very, each plant has its own individual needs and desire, and you have to work with the plant. You can't decide on your own I don't have time, I have to go on vacation now. Thus, the plant will wait for me. That won't work. And lavender is the same way. You need to pick it when it's ready, not when you're ready.
Right. And is it a matter of, you know, just using the metaphor, but do they speak to you? Do you listen?
I look. I just have eyes to see.
Okay.
And my nose works really well, too.
Okay.
No, it's all pretty much seasonally. I picked, harvested, and distilled lavender up and down the state of California, and I can tell you in various areas where it's ready at what time, and be pretty close to it within a week or so. And the place I used to go near Santa Barbara, it was up in the hills. It was a little cooler there. It had a cool valley with fog. That would always have been about the third week of June. But I know that where you are, it could be much earlier than that.
Oh, okay.
It's when it's ready, not when you're ready.
Right.
You know, if you harvest lavender. Well, there was a French woman that used to live up there that only harvested her lavender when it was in seed, when it was seeding, and she got a really, really good crop out of it, good product. But generally speaking, it's just 50-50, 50% totally flowering and 50% close to flowering. That's when you would pick it.
Hmm.
You have to look. You know, you're a farmer. You have to pick the plant when it's ready.
Well, indeed. Yeah, that's observation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And just a personal thing for yourself, do you use certain perfumes and essential oils every day, on an everyday basis?
No, actually, I don't. I always knew that if you use too much of anything, you could become sensitized to it. So even though I have thousands, I would say thousands of bottles, tiny bottles from 1 dram size to 1 pound size bottles, which is about 8 ounces or more. By the way, essential oils weigh different, have different weights. So when I say, if I said 8 ounces of rosemary oil, I have to tell you whether I'm talking about weight or volume, because those two things are completely different. And there are essential oils that are very close to the specific gravity of water. And there are some essential oils that are much, much lighter than water and thus float on water. And there are some that actually sink. But in any case, I actually forgot the subject we were talking about.
Okay.
I forgot. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We were just... about what time of the year to collect and what you use every day for yourself.
Oh, yes, I remember now. So, yes, I have a lot of bottles around here. And, no, I don't open and use them every day. And I do at least twice a week. I have a kit that I call the Vocabulary of Odor to refresh my memory and to remember. I practice just like anybody. It's like practicing anything. I will go through my vocabulary of odor and smell anywhere from 7 to 28 bottles to remind myself what they should smell like. And, of course, I have a garden here in San Francisco, so I have real plants to compare against the bottles.
The bottle version, yeah. Now, for somebody starting, learning how to smell, is that, you know, a acquired thing, or some people can do it, some people can't?
I can teach anybody. Give me 3 days and I can teach you how to do it.
Oh.
No, it's not something you can learn in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's just like learning your colors as a child. If you're a child and you see something and you don't know the word yellow, you can't call it yellow, right?
Right.
But once you learn that particular color is called yellow, then you can tell what it is forever after. And that's the same with odors. Once you get your vocabulary down, you can actually define anything by about 7 words. But that's called basic. That's kindergarten stuff. We have an advanced vocabulary of odor that has 28 odors. My suggestion to people is go out and smell things. Actually, go out and smell consciously with all your senses awake, smell things, even doorknobs, even handrails, even the wooden walls in your house, even the plaster or the leaves or the trees or the bark or the roots. Just smell them, and you will begin to awaken your sense of smell so that you are much more demanding in their description.
Well, that's beautiful. Yeah, we do need to be aware of what's around us. We tend to put blinders on, I know, in all our senses. But now you're still doing workshops and training. So can you tell us about what you're doing now?
Well, I am 80, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of slowing down. I want to, anyway. It's a little bit hard. I write workbooks. I haven't written a book, like a major book, for a while, mostly because it's not interesting anymore. Yeah. So I do a lot of, as I said, I have 25 books. They're on my website that various subject matters that I'm fascinated with. And I still do workshops in my home. I don't travel anymore outside of the city for work because everything's here. I have everything in my house that mm-hmm. I need. It's very hard to carry. I used to do perfumery workshops pretty much all over the country, but that was prior to 9/11, and I could carry 4, 5, or 6 boxes packed, you know, solid with equipment and essential oils. It was much easier then. It's not as easy. And so I do my workshops here in my home. I have a floor, a whole entire floor of my house that's devoted to classroom. Mm. And in 2017, I'm doing one major perfume class, and only one, and it's in August.
Ah. Do you have the date of that?
Sure. I do, actually. Okay. It's 8 days. Over 2 weekends, and it's August, is it 8th? It's August 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th, and then the second weekend is the 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th.
Oh, okay.
And it's 8 days from 9 to 4.
Hmm. That's intensive.
And it's real perfumery. It isn't messing around perfumery. It's serious. Mm-hmm. We're going to do maceration and enfleurage and tinctures and bases and accords and basic perfumery and vocabulary of odor and blending and working with alcohols and carriers. We'll probably make 10 to 15 different things.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, perfumes, it's the blending, isn't it? It's creating that certain smell.
Well, you have to extract it from the plant.
Mm.
So that's, and then I try to teach people about the different, the organoleptics of the essential oils and the absolutes, meaning the color, the clarity, the viscosity, the intensity of odors and how they interact. Mm. And then we make things together, and then they're able to see, smell, and sometimes not always, but even taste the differences in these things.
Hmm. Oh, that sounds like a wonderful workshop. And
hard.
Yeah, that's, I'd say so, and something you have to keep up. As you say, if you don't use it, you lose it on something like
correct.
That.
Well, correct, yes.
And, but now the thing is, over these many years you've been doing this, you've also created and have also led a number of the associations that promote herbalism and essential oils and things. How does that work for you? Are you still doing that? Or
No, I'm not involved in group anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have about a 10-year interest span cycle. and then I move on to something else. I'm very individualistic. I'm kind of an academic enthusiast. And I find something new that interests me, and I just move with it.
Mm.
Like distillation, I spent 10 or 15 years learning distillation and selling the stills. And it's, once I get, it's fascinating. It's utterly fascinating.
Mm.
But I'm not involved in the group events anymore.
Right.
Or organizations.
Of that,
although,
yeah.
You know, they call me. They do call me and ask me things, and of course I respond, but I don't go to meetings or conferences like
right.
that anymore. That's not quite true, you know. I went to a 5-day distillation conference just in October in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still doing it, but not as much.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's you have to be able to leaven what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
With reality. And so the next 10 years, what's going to be your purpose then? You led me into that one.
Please let me just get through this these last next 2 months. I'm really, really involved in this timeline of 1967, the Summer of Love. I mean, I'm doing a slideshow presentation at the DeYoung Museum on June 3rd, and I'm really not thinking past June 3rd in regards to fashion. I have a wonderful presentation I'm going to be doing. It's open to the public. I think the tickets are $5 or $10. I'm not sure. You know, that's the DeYoung puts that on. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing. I'm just doing it.
Okay.
And actually, on Monday, I'm going to be interviewed by a French art magazine regarding fashion. So right at the moment, I'm kind of involved in all this 1967 business. And then once that's over, I'm going to be very much involved in preparing for my natural perfumery class, which I have room for 6 students. I won't take more than 6. It's intense, and I want people to know that.
Right.
And the next 10 years, oh my gosh, I think I should retire, don't you?
Oh no. Wouldn't you be bored?
I will never be bored. I have things I have to do at home, and I don't have to do them out in public.
Oh, in that respect, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure you're going to keep busy in one way or the other, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And so, somebody starting out, wanting to start out in the field, how should they make their first baby steps in it? What should they look for?
I think it's like anything. It's a matter of education. I think you should get a book, read your book, find a good teacher, then another teacher. I think that part of the problem, no, it's not a problem. Sometimes people find a teacher and stick with that one person forever. And it should be more like history or science or geography or geology. You don't just ever have one teacher. You have a number of them. And you begin to concentrate on one part of the subject or another, and then you move on. I started using herbs because both my family were farmers way back when, and then they moved to a small town. But, you know, at that time, they still had quite big gardens where we grew items in the garden.
Right.
And then I moved on to marine zoology and botany in college, and then marine biology. But it's a matter of studying. Learn how to study. Read, study, learn, move on.
Was studying more of an inspiration than a specific person or people inspiring you?
You mean in herbs?
Well, just generally in life.
There were a couple of people that were very important to me. My high school science teacher was really important. I always had kind of a questioning mind, and he allowed me to study certain parts of, you know, he had a huge library in the science class, and there were rows of books that went very high. You needed a ladder to get up there. And I could see that the stuff on the top shelf was more interesting than the things on the bottom shelf. And he was very inspirational. And when I was in college, I had a great marine biology teacher who was very inspirational. And my mother always let me move forward and do what I wanted. She never held me back. She was interesting. My mother was very interesting.
Ahead of her time?
Very much. I think that she was working, she was a farm girl that had come to California from Canada. And she worked, and then she got a job at the, I grew up in Antioch, California.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a military base right nearby called Camp Stoneman. And that was just around, you know, right about, I'm born in 37. The war started in, what, 41, the Second World War.
Right.
And both my parents went to work for the war effort at the camp nearby at the base. And she was ahead of her time that way. I didn't know any other mothers that worked for a living, that worked outside of the home. And she always worked very hard to get equal pay for equal work. I think she probably would have been a feminist if it had been later on.
Good point, isn't it? Yeah, if there was a framework to have worked with,
Yes.
But of course, it must be satisfying, because I'm sure you know that you've obviously inspired a lot of people in the last 50 years of your work. You know,
oh my God, 50 years. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. That's a nice big round number, isn't it?
It is a big fat round number. I hope so. I hope that I've inspired women to move on and move forward with the things they want to do, and to be independent thinkers, to be creative thinkers. I hope so.
Indeed, I think you have. I think I told you I took a class, I think, was it 1978 or something?
From me?
From you, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
It was in the Mission. It was a city college class on holistic health.
Oh, you know, I used to teach for the University of California Extension.
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
And they were so advanced at that time. We did classes that they wouldn't allow just 4 years after that.
That's correct. It went away, that class. Yes, indeed. It was brilliant. A lot of us remembered it, I think, and went on and used all those things that we learned in those classes.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
So thank you very, very much. And thank you, Jeannie Rose, for coming on and letting us give you some plaudits for all the work you've done over these years, the good work and how that's spread out. And I mean, I know so many people who work with essential oils and aromatherapy, and it's part of their lives.
You know, I've written all these books, and they're still available on my website. Sometimes not in stores, but they're still on my website. And there's only one or two books that have gone out of print, out of my whole pile.
Wow, that's...
And my class that is singular, the natural perfumery class is on my website. And then, of course, then there's the June 3rd fashion event.
Yes.
At the De Young Museum. This is a funny year this year, that's for sure.
I think a lot of people are thinking that. But I think your help, that's going to be great. It's the 60s were an amazing time in San Francisco. They were very special. We've seen that after 50 years. That hasn't faded. And so I think it's very worthy what you're doing to give people a reminder what if you allow creativity to flower.
Well, thank you.
And what is your website? How can people get hold of you?
www.jeannierose.com. Couldn't be easier. And it's Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-E, Rose, R-O-S-E.com. And then there's several sections in there. There's a whole section on articles. People can read articles, about 200 different articles on subjects. There's my the calendar page for the class. And then there's a book page for the books.
Beautiful. Well, I'll hope everyone come and check it out. I really appreciate you calling and just getting a little bit, learning a bit about you, and a very important person.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and keep it up.
I will. I'll try.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. Jeannie Rose. Thank
you. You're very welcome.
Okay.
When I speak to the flowers in my backyard, when I speak to the flowers in my backyard, when I speak to the flowers.